good evening. Can you hear me all right? My name's Jim Silpert. I am a senior software consultant, and I've been working on trying to improve these machines for the past year and a half. I've spoken three times at certification hearings for the Secretary of State when they have these hearings about certifying these machines, and I've been given expert status. And that's twice for Diebold, once for Sequoia. And there's another meeting, another certification hearing for ESNS next week on the 17th. And I'm not sure if I'll speak then because we're heavy into a political season, but I have acquired a little bit of knowledge about this topic, and I hope we can have a good conversation about it. This will be a mixture of talk and some videos. And I want to start off with one DVD here that will run about 10 minutes, which will give you an introduction. And this DVD is in this version is called Watergate. It's going to be in a full-length hour and a half long movie on HBO next month. I think starting the 2nd of November. This is a little promotional thing. You're going to see in this video some people talking, Barbara Boxer among others, and especially two important things, because I like to start these talks off by laying to rest the idea that these machines can't be hacked, can't be fiddled with. In the movie, you'll see a woman in Louisiana in the 90s get out of her car and go into a warehouse. She was a candidate for some council seat in Louisiana. And she lost the race. And they had these warehouses. They had a warehouse with these machines in the warehouse. And she, as a candidate, was allowed to go in and look at the machines and try them out. And these were old Sequoia machines. Actually, those machines are still used in certain jurisdictions. And there's no paper trail on them. And what she's going to do is press the button for her name, and her opponent's going to appear in the little window at the bottom, which means that's showing you what it registered. It was flipping votes. And she can't do anything about it. And people will say, well, that was Louisiana in the 90s. I'm sorry. That's still going on. It went on in Florida this spring. It went on in Georgia. In Cynthia McKinney's race in August. This stuff still goes on. And then there's going to be another sequence in there. Immediately after the Louisiana sequence, you're going to hear Dr. David Dill of Stanford University Computer Science say these machines can be used to flip one person 10,000, 100,000 votes. And a bit later, you're going to see Bev Harris sit down with Howard Dean and show him how to flip votes on the central tabulator. The central tabulator is the central vote totaling machine. It's kept at county headquarters. We have a question here. By flipping votes, I mean you vote for candidate A, you get candidate B registered as the official vote. You flip it. You'll see Howard Dean and Bev Harris. And they're working with the central tabulator that counts the votes. And she's going to show Howard how easy it is on the GEMS database from Diebold to change votes in a minute and a half. If you know what you're doing, and it's really, in this case, not hard, one person could change a lot of votes very easily. And that will be demonstrated.
Could you do it? If you wanted to?
If I had the setup for it, yeah, I could do it. If Howard can do it, a lot of people can do it. I'll be showing them how to do it, but it's a little bit harder than working a spreadsheet, but not much. If you have the right software on it, but that's standard Microsoft Access software. There's no password protection, nothing. And this, when I first heard about it, I said, this gets to be scary. only it gets worse, and you'll hear more about how it gets worse. So you'll see a voting machine, an older Sequoia model, flipping votes where she's voting for herself and her opponent's name will appear, and then later on you'll see Howard Dean being shown how to flip votes in the central tabulator. They're dealing with a few hundred votes there, but it could be a few hundred thousand. Because this is where all the votes for the county are totaled up in that machine. So let's see how this works. That Votergate film will be on HBO next month. It will be called Hacking Democracy. They changed the title. And then there's going to be full length. You just saw a little 10-minute segment. They changed the title to Hacking Democracy. And it will be on HBO, I think, even November 2nd. Do you have any questions about what you saw there? Aside from the politicians speaking, but the hacking we saw? Yes, ma'am?
If you have a chance,
sir. I'm sorry.
Okay. Have you had a chance to see if it's really that easy to hack it in real life by dropping down my computer and coming in through the program directly? Does it look like it bypassed the
The password system is in the GEMS vote tabulator system from Diebold. They were using Microsoft Access to get at the database and put the votes.
Okay.
That's not hard.
So they have to do some write their own access routines to get into it?
No, because black box voting has uncovered this. This is called the GEMS hack, by the way, in the community. They tend to take Microsoft Access away, but there's still enough basic language facilities included in the whole system that people will write basic macros and still make the same thing happen, only it's less visible. When I go and observe an election, because I have some idea what's going on, I just go plant my, this is in Alameda County, I plant myself outside the tabulator room and I just watch that screen. I don't want to see any program coming up other than what's supposed to be coming up. Because if I saw Microsoft Access coming up in the case of Diebold, I would have just had a fit. So that's what I do on election night, last time till 4 a.m. And once it seemed that most of the important elections were ready then or announced and so on, then I went home. But I wanted the person working that tabulator to know somebody was watching. Yes, ma'am. Okay, I'll get to that. You're starting to talk about an Easter egg thing here. I'm going to give you some background of how we got into this situation, and then I'll talk about some of the testings. You saw Mark Radke from Diebold talking. He and the other government officials love to talk about all the federal testing and state certification process that goes on. And I will show you that that thing's full of leaks. It is hardly secure. A comment, there was some mention of Ohio. I don't go into, Florida was self-evident. Ohio, I don't go into that because you get wrapped up in a whole different debate, and that's not what I'm not interested in talking about the history. I'm talking about what can we do now and how can we fix it. If you want to read about it, I would suggest you go to rollingstone.com and find Robert Kennedy's article about this from about June about Ohio, and that'll give you a very good start. And then there's half a dozen books now that you find at Amazon that you can read about Ohio and the debate about that as to whether or not that was stolen What Ohio does clearly teach us, just from the number of people that had to wait in these lines in black districts and in college campuses, in districts around college campuses. And I mean, I've seen one video where I think the thing goes on for a couple hundred yards, the waiting line, in the rain. Is that if they can't cheat, they're going to try. And what I will try to explain to you is they can cheat using these machines. They certainly tried in Ohio, and the Democrats are not innocent on this. I went to high school near Richard J. Daley's Chicago in the 60s, and they were cheating down there. There was a Democrat. So it's both sides. We got to fix this so that neither side has any doubts about who was elected fairly. Now, so that was just my one little comment. You can find it. Just go to Amazon or your favorite bookstore and do Ohio election 2004, and you'll find a number of books in there. I am, by the way, the author of a website called Counted as Cast. That's what a vote should be, countedascast.com, countedascast.com. And there's a lot of information there. Most of what I'm saying tonight is going to be there. So we don't have to hand out notes. I actually created that website from my speech notes and then added to it. So you get a lot of information there. Now, how do we get into this situation? Well, they had, first of all, the Republican right either started up or got into, brought up election machine companies. Diebold, Sequoia, ES&S, Hardin or Civic. This is all laid out in Bev Harris's book, Black Box Voting. If you go to blackboxvoting.org, on the right side, you can see that you can download the book, especially Chapter 8 talks about the history of these companies. The book's a couple of years old, but the history is still valid. And then Florida happened. And it was a mess, and everybody said, well, we can't have these butterfly ballots and punch card ballots. So in 2002, among others, Robert Ney was involved in creating a bill called the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, also known as the Hack America Vote Act. If you did not hear the news today, he's back admitting, he got all wrapped up in this corruption scam with Jack Abramoff. And he helped write the bill. He's one of the principal authors. And Diebold paid Abramoff's firm a lot of money to help get this bill written. There is the implication from a number of my colleagues that basically Diebold wrote that bill. And if you look at it, it sort of looks like it. And that offered billions of dollars to counties and states to go out and buy voting machines. And one of the requirements they had on that was to make the machines accessible for the disabled. And they would say, you know, the punch cards, the blind people can't use it very well, and people who have trouble using their arms can't use it very well, so we need these electronic voting machines. And there are other potential benefits from the electronic voting machines. They help people with foreign languages because you can show the different foreign languages easily on the screen. People who have vision problems, you can make the font bigger. There are a number of nice advantages to that, provided the vote gets counted right. So they passed that law, and the law said that as of this year, you have to have at least one accessible in this case meaning usable by the disabled, accessible machine per precinct. And California came along and passed a law saying, okay, but you're going to have a VPAT, a VVPAT, voter verifiable paper audit trail. Now, you saw in the film these touchscreen machines. In California, on the side, there is a roll of paper, like adding machine or cash register paper, that writes down behind a shield, a clear plastic shield, what your vote is. And the voter is supposed to verify the paper audit trail. In other words, they make their selections touching the spaces on this, the candidates on the screen, the name of the candidates on the screen. And they go through a couple pages of this, and at some point they come in and they say, okay, let's verify your vote. And it'll go back and screen by screen, show you a screen of the candidates that you voted for and the names of the candidates on that paper audit trail. And you're supposed to check the names on the screen against the names on the paper audit trail. On some of these systems, that means you lean over. It's not easy. And if you have vision problems, there's some problems. The blind can't check this. They can't read the paper. So that's one of the issues already, is that people who have real trouble seeing can't check their votes. In order to vote, they use an audio system. But when that audio system plays back for them to verify their vote, it's playing back from the computer memory, the information in the computer memory, and not from the paper. So what we had was a number of things coming together saying, okay, you had to have machines for the disabled, you had to have the paper audit trail, there's all this money in the counties were being rushed into buying them here in California and across the country. And they're installing a lot of them, jurisdictions are installing them this year. Alameda County has had them, had Diebold system for a number of years, and Sequoia started 4 or 6 years ago in Riverside. And they were also, Diebold, for example, was used in 2002 in Georgia. Now in Georgia, there's no paper audit trail. It's like that situation in Louisiana. You vote, and the machine registers the information in the computer memory. And at the end of the day, those votes are installed on a memory card, something similar to this thing. So, and that's in the touchscreen machine, and they get put on this memory card, and that gets carried back to central headquarters and put into a machine that reads them and pumps that data up to the central tabulator that you saw Howard Dean playing with. This is the equivalent of a ballot box. Well, they can be tampered with. A ballot box can be tampered with too. The problem is with this, there is virtually no trace, or there is no trace depending on how you do it. And as the professor was talking about, Professor Dill, if one person does it right, he can hack a lot of votes, put in a little program, sort of virus-like, to flip votes on all of the county's machines. So that's basically how we got into the situation. Starting in June, counties were starting to use these machines. Some of them were doing it earlier, but others were just starting this year and across the country because of this HAVA bill. Much of the country has no paper audit trail, so there's no way to check the vote. California is one of the better states, and they said, we have to have this paper audit trail. But as we'll discuss a little bit later, just because you have a paper audit trail doesn't mean you're going to use it properly, that there are going to be real audits going on. Yeah?
We have the laboratory along with the touchscreen in place after you can hear what you're voting for.
Yeah.
And it's not that one, right? I mean, then maybe we get out of the paper.
if somebody who has vision problems is using the auditory adapter, he's hearing what the machine's telling him. That's not necessarily what the machine is going to put on the paper. He has no way of checking. Those of us who can see can double check. And those of us who can see, that's hardly a guarantee. Because you can program these machines, you go up there and you vote for candidate A, and the first time around it shows you, well, to candidate B. And you sort of are a little, well, computers don't make mistakes, so I'm going to do that again. Go back and do it again. Well, that's a signal to the program, if there's a program in there to flip votes, that's a signal to the program to do it right the second time. But most people don't check. And indeed, we have films of, there's a cover for these paper audit trails, a plastic cover, which is designed so that the blind can vote and have nobody see, since they can't see, nobody can see how they're voting, so you keep your secret vote. But we have video from PBS of machines where that paper audit trail is covered for everybody. And the public has to know, gee, you're supposed to open that up and check it. But there have been instructions in counties in California to the poll workers just cover it up. And that's wrong, because that's there to be checked. So just because you have the paper audit trail doesn't mean it's getting used properly. It means we're better than Georgia and Florida, but it's not necessarily being used properly. Now, let's talk about the federal and state testing for a moment. The way the system was set up, the National Association of Secretary of State and National Association of State Election Directors, NASED, got the job of setting up a certification and testing process. And what they set up, and by the way, when you go to these conventions and so on, there you see Diebold, Sequoia, ESNS, and Hart wining and dining all these people. They're there having a good old time with these folks. A company that wants to have their system tested has to pay the company that's doing the testing. This is kind of like letting Barry Bonds pay the guy who's going to test him for steroids. That didn't work in my book. As a general summary, these systems have not been tested by people that have not been paid by the companies themselves. At least not for security. The counties and the state take things through a logic and accuracy test. That means they put in votes, sample votes, and they make sure the votes totals come out right. So it sort of works. But they don't get tested for security hacks. Because companies don't want that to happen. We just had a fight in Alameda County trying to get the county to do this kind of testing. On June 8th, the Board of Supervisors said, yes, it should be done, and this Tuesday they changed their mind. There's a lawsuit now. It's going to take that to court. We'll see what happens in the court.
How do you do a
security test? You bring in people who really know what they're doing and say, can you hack into this machine? And that GEMS demo was found by somebody who was brought in, the registrar in Leon County, Florida, a guy named Sancho, who's very brave, actually invited, asked Black Box Voting to bring somebody in to check his system out. And there was a gentleman named Thompson who came up with a GEMS hack, showed it could be done. A bit later then, Black Box Voting brought in a Finnish security expert named Heidi Hursti, who demonstrated that you could hack the scanners. He was allowed to do it. The registrar invited him in. And he just took one of these memory cards, played with it at home for a little bit, came back, stuck it in the machine. They did a vote, and he completely changed the little vote. And on top of it, it said in the little screen, "Are we having fun yet?" Okay, so you bring in good experts to try it. Another thing you can do is to have some people look at the source code. Now, this is what Bev Harris found when she was digging around and found all these 40,000 or how many Debo files. She found source code files for the GEM system on the internet. And she called up Avi Rubin and said, "Would you have your folks look at this?" Now, when these officials say, "Well, these systems get tested and inspected," yeah, but it's not all that good. One of the things that they can do that they found when looking at this, and there was a report. If you go into the website countedasgas.com and look on the security button, you'll start to see these reports coming out where they talk about these things. And just as an example, they found that these machines are supposed to have an encryption code used to scramble the information up and then unscramble it. So that people, the only way people can read it or machine can read it is if they know the special PIN number. And that number should be changed for each county, for each election. And it's a secret number, except that it's 8F265HD4. All over the internet. And Dr. Douglas Jones of the University of Iowa first saw this in 1997, told the Bolden officials, "Say, hey, this isn't right." It's still there. That number is still in that code. And we saw that this year. Now, these wonderful independent testing authorities that are supposed to be checking these things have let it pass. And it's still there. I mean, there are other bugs that are still there. Another example, I'll give you two more. Another example, Mr. Hersey came back, he did this hack on the scanner a year ago, May. And then he did another version to prove that it could go all the way through the whole system and really change an election. A black box made enough noise about it that they were putting pressure on California to try the test out. And at one point last November, Secretary of State McPherson said, "All right, we're going to let black box try this out." And I heard that on the radio, and they were pre-announcing an agreement that did not exist to let black box voting do the testing, to try this hack to show that it could work. They pre-announced it. I called up the people at black box voting because I didn't believe it. And they said, "No, we have no deal yet." So that announcement was not true. From the Secretary of State's office. And I heard it on the radio. And there was no test. What he did instead was take this problem. The problem is that on this card there was interpreted code. I won't go into the technology. Interpreted code means it's easier to hack. And in section 4.4, I believe 2, of the federal guidelines, it says thou shalt not use interpreted code. It was on there. And so people are saying, "Well, how come you're certifying a system that's got interpreted code?" And the Secretary of State sent this problem back to the ITAs. I said, take a look at this, because you didn't even look at it the first time. You didn't even tell us about it, that there's this forbidden code and that there's an interpreter in the scanner that's forbidden. You didn't tell us about it. He sent it back, and they came back with a report saying, yeah, we found 3 security bugs in it. That's just after giving it back to them the second time. At the same time, he passed that code on to University of California computer scientist named David Wagner, and he put together a team. And they looked at the same problem. And they found 16 security bugs. I had a little debate with one of the supervisors and said, you're not going to have the government do this. And I said, look, the University of California found 16 bugs. The private company found 3, which is better. Now, in the University of California report from last February, which you'll also find in this site, the team said on page 36, this system from Diebold should not be used in statewide elections. I'll repeat. They said, this system should not be used in statewide elections. Nevertheless, Bruce McPherson certified it. And it will be used in various counties like San Diego and Los Angeles in November. If you're getting an idea that when they talk about all the certification and testing process, that it's a sham, you got it. They love to talk about this. It's almost more of an impediment to other competitors coming into the business, and indeed we've seen evidence of that with a product called AutoMark. It's more of an impediment to machines, the company trying to come into the business, trying to do a good job. It kept them out because it's so expensive to go through this. Just the third case, what these companies should be really good at is testing machines physically so they can deal with extreme heat, extreme cold. I mean, some of these companies do stuff for NASA. And to his credit, a year ago, July, the Secretary of State said, well, we're going to test these Diebold systems out ourselves, and we're going to get a whole bunch of them in a warehouse, the touch screens, and we're going to have people just put in a bunch of votes. And let's see what happens. Stress testing or volume testing. Somewhere between 10 and 30% of machines broke down, depending on how you count it. I mean, we're talking about didn't boot, crashed, paper jammed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At that point, he didn't certify and said to Diebold, go fix it. So to his credit, he got that right, but you have to ask the questions, where is the federal testing on this? How come the state of California has to do this? And how come we have to be asking the Alameda County to go test it ourselves? Because the federals and the state people won't do it. And how come the registrar of San Mateo County now had a clause in Section 50 of his contract to allow him to hire a computer scientist to look at the code for Harder and Pacific himself or themselves to double check, because he doesn't trust what the federal and state people are doing? How come the counties have to do this? It shouldn't be their responsibility, but those that are recognizing what's going on, they're doing it. So, by the way, as part of the whole process, when the public tries to get information about what's going on, this is what they see. Redacted reports. This is an official report about Diebold system from a year ago. It's got redaction all over it. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's said. Really, the whole situation gets symbolized by this Easter egg for two reasons. One, there's something inside. The problem is, we don't know what's inside. We can't look at it. All of this is owned by private corporations, and they call it a corporate secret. And we can't look at it. So we don't know what's inside. And I sent an email a year ago to the Secretary of State's office saying, how do you know that the code that's been tested at the federal and certified at the state level is the code that's in the machine on election day? It was sort of an obvious question, but people weren't asking, but it was sort of an obvious question, but I said, I'm going to ask. Because I didn't see any indication that they knew. And the answer that came back is, we're working on it. We don't know what's inside those machines. And I double-checked by asking Dr. Wagner, am I crazy, or do we really not know what's in those machines? And he said, you're right. We don't know what's inside. You combine that with the concept of a computer Easter egg. And you can look that up in Wikipedia or look on my site. A computer Easter egg is hidden code in a program that's hidden, and it's a little prize. A classic example is earlier versions of Microsoft Excel. They had in the Excel spreadsheet, if you knew what to do, which buttons to push, you could get a flight simulator to pretend you're flying around, hidden in the code. But you had to know how to activate it. That's called an Easter egg. Now we have machines. We don't know what's in them. They can contain hidden code. And no amount of testing will find it. Because you have to know how to activate it, and there could be a million ways to activate it. So all of this testing, the logic and inaccuracy testing, and all of that they talk about will ever discover this code. And an insider or even somebody just voting from a precinct can activate that code. You ask me how? You go up to one of these voting machines, you go in and you write in a name on a ballot. Go in and write it in. Special name only. You put in your own special code, ABC5073. Which the special code would say, okay, that's your activation. Now go flip 507 votes for this candidate. No amount of testing will ever see that. Plus, the program can erase itself when it's done and leave no trace. Now, that's the reality. We've been talking to officials about this and talking, and slowly they're coming around. The media has been AWOL on it. You don't hear about this in the media much. You will from now, about June, CNN's Lou Dobbs has started to get on this, and he's all over it once it dawned on him what's going on. But in the case of Lou Dobbs, what triggered his interest was reports that the Sequoia system, and by the way, this county is using Sequoia. There was a big mess in Chicago with the Sequoia system. These electronic card ballot boxes, they lost for at least a day about 500 of these cards in February. And they always blame human error on this. Well, yeah. The poll workers are understaffed and so on, but they lost 500 of these. And that didn't look good. But on top of it, in the central tabulator rooms, they had employees from Sequoia who were speaking Spanish because they were Venezuelans, because Sequoia is now owned by Venezuelans. Lou Dobbs, apparently a Republican, heard of this, and he just said, no, wait a minute. Now, I don't know if these Venezuelans or right-wing Venezuelans, left-wing, I have no idea. I do know that the company Sequoia is owned by Smartmatic in Florida, that you take it to Amsterdam, Smartmatic, and then into, I believe it's Curacao, and you see who's owning the Smartmatic company, and it goes right back into people in Venezuela, and you start to Google that. And it's all over. I mean, It's owned by Venezuelans. Well, I really don't have anything for or against Venezuelans. All you have to look at Diebold. The Diebold election systems was the global election management systems, founded by three Canadians. The company was located in Vancouver. The founders all wound up getting busted and convicted for stock fraud. They hired a cocaine trafficker to help them with the system. And he brought in a buddy of his from prison named Dean, Jeffrey Dean. Mr. Dean has 23 convictions in King County, Washington. I've seen the papers for computer embezzlement. And that code is still running on the GEMS software. We have a problem because we're supposed to trust software that's written by embezzlers. I think we're going to take a little 5-minute break here, get some coffee and so on, and we're going to reset this system up, and we'll start to talk about some more of these, a little bit more about these systems and what we can do to help fix it. Unless there are any questions for the moment. Yes, sir.
One question. Story County is going to be testing their machines on the 23rd of October, and they invited us to come and look. Okay, what does somebody like me look for when I go in there? Because I'm obviously not a computer expert. I can't even set up a projector.
We got the projector set up. If you go to countedascast.com, you're going to see a modest page. If you click on monitoring, and there are resources as to what to look for. countedascast.com/monitoring.php. And there's several people that have published, including Black Box, and a colleague of mine, Michelle Gabriel, published papers about what to look for and how to do this. You're going to see the logic and accuracy testing. You should go, and you should go mainly with the idea of learning how this thing works. The first time around, you're going to learn how it works, or how it's supposed to work, or the way that you're also going to start to establish a relationship that hopefully will be constructive on all sides. To learn how the system works. And you're not going to necessarily see much, but one thing people in Los Angeles County, when they went in May, I said, well, go look for the zero tape. At the beginning of the session, the system should print out a zero tape showing there are no votes in there. In Los Angeles County, the first time they did that in May, there was no zero tape. They didn't do it. They were just there this time around, and yep, there was a zero tape. They did it right this time because they knew people were coming in and watching. Just the fact that you're there is going to help encourage them to do the job that they should. And then go to this monitoring page and download some of these sheets. There's a lot of work there. And we'll talk about what you should be looking for during the election and auditing in the second part of this presentation. Okay? Any other questions for the moment? All right, let's take a brief break and come back. I want to show you a couple of videos. One is from just recently. A computer scientist at Princeton showed again these machines being hacked through a virus. And what I'm showing you will be on what's shown at CNN. This is just another way to do it, and it's quick. And then there's the issue that comes up. You will hear, as we've heard in Alameda County, oh, we can trust our county employees. Even though there's in Alameda County only 2 people who have access to the tabulator, because in part the registrar was trying to shore that part up, but in part because we've been at
the Board of Supervisors meeting time and time again saying you've got to shore this system up. So there's only two people that access the tabulator. I don't know if we can trust those people. I don't know if somebody's not going to give them $100,000. Imagine the presidency of the United States at stake. Or this year, imagine that the office of Secretary of State is up for grabs, because it is. And just sort of think back to Catherine Harris of Florida and Kenneth Blackwell of Ohio. And I don't want to say that the person's as bad as they are, but he's doing some of the same stuff. So we'll take the videos here.
Okay, keep the lights down, that's okay. Very quickly, do you have any questions for that? One question here?
I was wondering on the thing for Randolph, you know, so do you tear it off and keep that, or?
That's what the poll worker does, is they get the paper printout at the end of the day. And that gets carried down to county headquarters along with the electronic card, the electronic ballot box.
So they keep the paper printout?
They keep the paper.
That's
supposed to be a check part of the auditing. Is they print that out, and California law says there should be two of those tapes. And one of those tapes, these are the totals of how many votes each candidate got in that precinct or on that machine. One of those tapes, sets of tapes, should be posted outside the precinct on election night. That's in the law. In Riverside County, for example, is fighting it. People down in Riverside County wanted, I believe it was a court case or something, they want to fight to get Riverside County to follow the law. Now, Diebold obfuscated, said, well, these machines aren't attached to a network. Well, yes, they are. It's called the sneaker now, which is carrying that card around. They also complained that, well, this report wasn't peer-reviewed. No, as the professor says, you just saw it worked. That's sufficient. I would love if Diebold, Sequoia, and ESNS would submit their machines to peer review by computer scientists. That would be wonderful. Now, something that Alameda County is doing is they really put security tapes on these things and a lot of wrapping up. And some of the things that this claim they're going to be doing is represents an improvement. The security tapes will help, but they have to be put in the right place. Dave Harris has shown that with some security tapes, it's easy to take off. Avi Rubin, the same thing in Maryland with the security tapes that we're using in Maryland. People also said, well, these machines aren't being sold anymore. Well, you have to parse this stuff. They're still used in Maryland, and they're still used in the state of Georgia, all over the state. No paper trail. And then let's address the idea here of how much we can trust these county's employees. And I'm not trying to impugn any specific county employee. And most of them certainly can be trusted, but not all.
Brett Friedman has worked doggedly on this issue, amassing tons of valuable news and information on the subject. A recent entry of his sums up the most important question facing our democracy. Can we trust the people running our elections? On a recent talk show, Brad asked the Monterey County Registrar of Voters, Tony Achundo, how he would proceed in the event of election tally discrepancy. Achundo told Brad Friedman, quote, there's obviously going to have to be some trust and faith in the elections official, or in this case, it's me. Well, on July 6th, the Salinas, California newspaper reported that Tony Achundo had just been charged with 25 counts of forgery, 14 counts of misapplication of funds, 3 counts of embezzlement, falsification of accounts by a public officer, and 1 count of grand theft. I don't want simply to trust election officials.
Okay, that was the Registrar of Monterey County. Embezzlement, issues of funds. So the registrar. It doesn't, I mean, $100,000 bribe is nothing in certain cases, but $100,000 can be an awful lot for some people.
who have access, inside access. Or again, we have the Sequoia, like the Easter egg problem, but we don't know what's in those machines, and there can be hidden code in them. So it doesn't even have to be a county official. It can just be somebody, a rogue element inside of one of these companies, or somebody who has 23 convictions for embezzlement doing this stuff. Okay. Time is going fast here, so I'm not going to show you another video which has somebody talking about the chaos in the polls on election day. Many poll workers work very hard, and indeed the job of setting all of this election up is really a huge logistical problem, where you have 10, 20, 30 people in a county elections department having to hire thousands of temporary workers to come in and work in one day, make it all work, and then get done. And it's chaos. And one of the things we need to do, and I'm going to try to propose it to whoever is in the legislature next year, is to move whichever election days we can to Saturday, so we get more and better volunteers. I am told that the average age of a poll worker is 72. That's part of the reason we're having problems. And there's a simple fix to that. Somehow make election day not a working day so we can get the volunteers in there. These machines are expensive. Counties are spending millions of dollars. LA County, just $50, $100 million, no problem. LA County is a huge county. For that money, we'd like these things to work as advertised, and they don't. And when they go and blame human element, I'm sorry, but when you work a system as a computer professional, you factor in the human element. And you set the system up to avoid human error. If you're paying that much money, do it right. What can we do about this? Well, several things. One is to set up open source software. That means the source code that goes into these machines, just have the state do it. Build machines with showing us the code that's going into the machines. I want to know what's inside. Deborah Bowen likes this idea. People have gone to McPherson and earlier secretaries of state, not interested. This is an obvious thing to do because we have the right to know what's going on inside. The principle of elections and voting is everything's open so the public can know what's going on, and nothing going on behind screens and people counting votes behind closed doors. It's got to be open. The software has to be open too. The last line of defense is the auditing, where, as example, state law requires 1% of precincts have their vote audited. And there are some gaping loopholes in that. For example, a new law was passed this year that said that, well, gee, we're having 40, going on 50% of our votes coming in absentee. There was, until next year, no requirement that those absentee vote totals get audited too. Senator Deborah Bowen has got a law passing. You got to audit the absentees, too. But this year, that's not there. One of the things you should do is go in and check, one, that the precincts are randomly selected. They really are. You have to call up the department and say, when are you going to select the precincts? I want to know that it's done randomly. San Francisco wasn't going to do it randomly until one single volunteer checked and then sent out an email message saying, they're not going to do it randomly, they're going to do blah, 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 but it's not random. And we made us think about it and got that fixed. This was in June.
A year ago for the special election, Los Angeles County did not select the precincts randomly. This June, one person showed up for the random selection of precincts in Los Angeles County. You can make a difference. And she was actually allowed to select the precincts. She had a random number table there. And she was actually allowed to select those precincts. So you need to make sure that those precincts are selected randomly.
Okay, it's Larry County. How do you check to make sure that it's selected randomly?
How do you check? You call up the elections department and say, when's that going to be done? And how's it going to be done? And you have hopefully some other contacts, and they should explain how they're going to do it. And you check to see if that makes sense, if that's random. What level of auditing, and how should we perform the auditing so that we can be reasonably sure that this election was correct? Crooked machines or not, depending on the paper audit trail. If you look at how slot machines in Nevada are audited, they get audited and checked much more thoroughly than our voting machines. And which one is more important? So that auditing gets to be more and more important, especially as I'm learning about what's going on here. So we need to double check that, have people go in and look at it. Some of it should be fairly obvious. They should explain what's going on. And when Michelle got those sheets and it said, you know, this guy got 32 votes over in one column, but you're supposed to write it out in another place, write out the 32 into 32. You know, they're writing 30. And they're check marks that are showing 29 votes on the same piece of paper for the same candidate in the same precinct. Yeah.
Poll takers that were right outside
the polling place, and they watch you, who did you vote for, the media. The exit polls.
And they don't do that anymore, right? And why? Who funded
the networks were funding the exit polls. And after Florida and Ohio, and the exit polls were hinting that maybe there was something funny with the official results. Our wonderful media said, oh, the exit polls were wrong. Only when you look at how the United States and Jimmy Carter observes elections in the Ukraine and other countries, they rely on those exit polls. And a number of computer scientists say, look, those exit polls have been tried and tested over years. They weren't wrong. Indeed, in Ohio, there was what was called a red shift. On into the night, the totals were being bent more and more from the exit polls towards George Bush. But people were copying down earlier exit poll results. And so they have a record of how this was being shifted over so that the polls match the official results rather than leaving the question open. Exit polls are important, but then you have to trust now who's doing the exit polls. That's another thought. Then, are there any more questions here? This talk is about titled Problems and Solutions. We have one big solution that you can be a part of in November. And I'm going to play a video and show you a couple of cases where she's talking. It's Deborah Bowen. She's running for Secretary of State. My first exposure to her, well, actually, I saw her at a hearing for instant runoff voting in Oakland. It was good. But then she held a hearing on what's going on with the certification of these voting machines and asked the Secretary of State to show up and explain what was going on since she was running the Senate Elections Committee. He didn't dare show up. He sent his assistants there. And I sat there and I learned that Deborah Bowen
really knows what she's talking about. She knows what bits and bytes and internet packets and COTS software and all this stuff. She knows it. And on top of it, she won't take spin for an answer. And that staff is trying to give her spin. And she kept coming back with the same question: are you going to do the Hursty hack? Are you going to do the Hursty test? Are you going to? And they kept trying to dodge the answer. She's a lawyer, and she just hammered away the same question about six iterations and finally said, okay, it's clear to everybody what the answer is. You're not going to security test these machines. When she got done, myself and other technical people, you know, said, gee, we have somebody who wants to be Secretary of State who has both brains and a backbone. And that's what she needs. And that's what California needs, and that's what this country needs. And I'm going to show you a couple of videos of her talking, and then I'll finish up.
I'm running for Secretary of State for two reasons, Florida and Ohio. Like many other Americans, I watched what happened in 2000 and in 2004 and saw that we were really at risk of losing our democracy, that 52% of Americans no longer have confidence that their vote will be counted as it was cast, that the turnout in our elections is sometimes under 25%, so fewer than one out of every four registered voters are bothering to vote. And we have to change that in order to make sure we continue to have a system of self-governance. I believe we're really at risk of losing that if we don't restore the integrity of our election systems. It means we need to get rid of electronic voting machines that don't have a paper trail, where we have no ability to know whether what people did in the election booth on election day gets reflected when someone is sworn into office. And not knowing and the doubts about the outcome of elections really undermine the very legitimacy of our government. We're willing to have someone we disagree with elected and sworn in as long as we believe the election was fair and that we'll have a chance at the polls for a different result in the next election cycle. And we absolutely have to fix this problem, this crisis of confidence in the counting, if we want to have a democracy where people take the time to study the issues and go and vote. Technology has given us all kinds of opportunities to do things differently, from getting our driver's licenses renewed online to looking up candidates who are running for office on a website. But it also has given us challenges and concerns. And the first thing that we need to do, and my first focus as Secretary of State, will be to deal with the questions about the security and integrity of electronic voting machines. There are so many places in this country where people don't have confidence in what's happening. There were so many reports of irregularities, of people going and voting for Kerry and having Bush come up on the screen. So my first priority will be to deal with that, to restore confidence in the system, not to use any system where we cannot know that the results in the polling place are what are reflected in the tally. Then we can go to really working with high school students, college students, underserved populations, and getting more people to turn out and to participate in the electoral process. We need to take back our elections, which have been privatized. We have three vendors in this country running almost every election system. We've had to fight to get things like access to the raw vote tally in Alaska. The vendor there is Diebold. They claim that that raw vote tally is so intertwined with their trade secret software that if they let people see the raw vote totals, it would violate their trade secrets. We cannot have a legitimately constituted government that runs on trade secret software when no one can see what the voting machines are doing. So I've taken the lead in California to fight for publicly owned software, where everyone can see every line of the computer code, and to keep voting equipment that's not secure or reliable and can't be verified from being used in our elections. It was used in our elections in California in June, and in fact, poll workers were sent home with voting equipment that they had access to the memory cards on. So there's no way we'll ever know, for example, what the real tally of the votes was in the 50th Congressional District election. It's probably right, but we can't verify it. And that has to change. One of the principles that democracy depends on is having people have information about what's going on in their government so that they can make decisions about who to vote for and whether to take action. When I walked into the legislature my first day in office after winning a seat that everyone said no Democrat could win, I discovered that we had all of the information about our legislative system on our computers in the office, but no one outside the Capitol could have access to it unless they were willing to pay over $1,000 a year in subscription fees to one of the two monopoly providers that had a lock on the information. So I decided to change that, and I introduced a bill. And I had a hard time within my own caucus. The chair of our rules committee would not set the bill for a hearing because the administrative people running our system did not want some new freshman legislator telling them how to run their system. And the vendors didn't like it because they were afraid they would be put out of business if people didn't have to pay for access to the information. I had some members of the legislature tell me that they didn't like it because if someone could go look up how they voted on a bill, how would they know what their constituents were caring about if they didn't have to go through the office? So that was about control. Then I had a hostile amendment inserted in the bill that would have allowed, or actually required, that the legislature impose a charge and would have put this information, made it into a profit center for the legislature. And it's information that was paid to create by taxpayer dollars. And I was really at a dilemma at that point because I wanted to put computer access to get it done. It had never been done anywhere in the world before. But I knew that if we started charging, that would go on and we'd see that in every agency and that we'd see it in court information, and I knew it was wrong. So I went home and I thought about it. I had this nightmare about Thomas Jefferson hawking the Constitution on the Home Shopping Channel. And I decided that if I couldn't get that charging provision out of the bill, that I would wait and do it again the following year until I could get it right. Being willing to lose the bill and to do it properly, I think, is what gave me the strength to convince my fellow members to take that provision out of the bill. And it was signed into law and has since been copied by every other state and eventually even by the federal government.
Thank you. Next, please. There's one more, but you can see these videos also at countedascast.com. Click on Bowen and then click on videos. You can download them.
Bert?
It's the same thing. That hasn't changed. She is state senator, termed out this year. She was chairman of the Senate Elections Committee. That's where I saw her running this hearing in January and a number of others where she's teaching these independent testing authorities how to do their job because they can't figure it out. She's now running for Secretary of State. She will be on the ballot in November. The fight over Congress is indeed important, but there's 435 seats. Because if you think of Catherine Harris and Kenneth Blackwell, and you think of the opposite, Deborah Bowen, and what she can do with this job, and it's not just California's 55 electoral college votes, it's how she can set precedents and
That's a huge state, with the power she will have as Secretary of State, to create open source software, to set up systems, set up studies and rules and regulations, how to do an audit right, how to do the procedures right. Because California can show the rest of the country, as they did with putting the legislature on the internet. She did that, and it's California that led the way. She wants to do it again with their voting machines. This is the single most important race in the United States this year, because of what she will do with it. She needs your help. You have to get the message out. Send emails. You can go to her website, DeborahBowen.com. Use a grassroots website, electbowen.org, where you can sign up, get some more information. You can go to my website and get some more information about how you can help. House parties will help. Just get some of the information and email it to your friends. And say, this is the single most important election in the United States this year. I have nightmares about embezzlers counting their votes. And we've got to get that fixed. A question?
Who's her competitor? Who's she running against?
She's running against the current incumbent appointed Secretary of State, appointed by North Schwarzenegger. After the previous Secretary of State had decertified Diebold, they ran him out.
Yeah. They made him out to be a loose nut.
They made him out to be a loose nut. They brought up some campaign finance problems, a few $1,000, and he's never been charged with anything, but they ran him out because he deserved that people. And he put a whole bunch of pet rules. He had an epiphany, a light bulb went out at one point, and he realized that Debo was lying to the state of California about what they were doing in his state. And when he understood that, we understood that they were putting new software in there without telling the state of California about it. He said, you're decertified. And then they got Schwarzenegger elected in a funny election. And a little while later, he's out, and they put McPherson. And even though his own people say, don't, these machines should not be used in the statewide election, he certifies it. This is the most important election in the country this year. I am a software engineer. And yet I feel like one of these civil engineers who's warning the government that the levees of New Orleans are going to break. And we've all seen what happens when the politicians ignore the engineers. We saw it in New Orleans. I came here tonight to tell you not just that these machines will break, they're already breaking. We have to get Deborah Bowen elected because she listens, she knows, she understands, and she has the backbone to get the things fixed. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Could you comment on, I believe,
Initiative,
what, 89?
Proposition 89, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. When I got started over a year and a half ago, I was trying to think strategically, how do we fix up the problems in this country on the infrastructure? And I said there were three problems. Medium, money, which is campaign financing and the lobbying, or as Herr Schwarzenegger used to say, the money comes in, the favors go out, the people lose. He's not talking about that anymore. The third topic was the machines, which you've heard about today. Proposition 89 is about the money factor.
It's on the ballot. It's called the Clean Money Bill. And what it does is allow candidates to run for office in the state of California. And if they get enough $5 contributions, and it's got to go more than a few, they have to really go out and get a bunch of $5 contributions and do some other things, the state will pay for the campaign to fix the line. This means then they cannot go out and spend their own money. If they choose to do it this way, they can go out and spend their own money, and they cannot go and ask the likes of the oil companies and the pharmaceutical companies or the unions or whatever for money for the campaign. Then they just use the state money. This is done in Maine and Arizona. And as the candidates figure this out, more and more regular people, honest people, are stepping up and running for state office. I believe the governor of Arizona is already a clean money candidate. California, again, has a second chance in this November to show the rest of the country how to do it right. And that is also extremely important. So I really hope that you support Proposition 89. The way I put it, if you're against corruption, before clean money, Proposition 89.
To me, there's a free speech issue that a person can't use their own money to promote their own ideas.
You can do it. It's not required. It's an option. You can run on your own money, and you can run on lobbyist money.
This public funded by public.
Right, and you're part
of it. I have troubles with that aspect of it. A person should be able to use their own money to promote their own.
Well, you can use your own money, but don't take the taxpayers' money.
Government gets public.
Well, that's your choice. You can give the public money, or it's not a perfect bill. Okay, you're pointing out the flaw. But again, the money comes in, the favors go out, the people lose. This is really the first bill we've seen in a while that's attempting to address this problem. And Lord knows we need to address this problem.
Is this exactly like the Arizona bill?
I think there's some variations in the Arizona bill. I don't know exactly. This is a different state. It's a much bigger state. And, different people are running it, so there were some variations. There actually was a proposed law, and the governor vetoed that. I believe he vetoed that. And I'm not sure. I think he vetoed that, but it got through the legislature. Well, I'm not sure. I think it made it through the legislature and said, no, so it's okay. It's not an initiative. And they're calling the governor, they're calling these people and saying, calling them on what he said. The money comes in, the babies go out, the people lose. Well, that's what this is about. About baby money. Other questions? Thank you very much for your patience and attention. I hope you